I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at malaria and see some innovations to address the disease. But first, a new strain of coronavirus has emerged, and it tends to give people pink eye. XBB.1.116, or Arcturus, is a strain of COVID-19's Omicron variant. First reported in January, the strain has rapidly spread in nations such as India and Indonesia. Arcturus is associated with more fevers than previous strains. Experts say its more distinctive trait, however, is its tendency to produce conjunctivitis, particularly when it infects children. Conjunctivitis, commonly known as pink eye, can cause mild to severe eye irritation, cloudy vision, and even discharge from the eye. Visually, it causes the white of the eye to appear pinkish or reddish. Arcturus is reported to be highly transmissible, but seems to respond well to the existing vaccines that treat Omicron. Turning now to malaria, the World Health Organization estimates that in 2020, 627,000 people died of malaria, most of them children under 5 in Africa. Millions of people are infected with malaria each year. Observers say innovative solutions are key to making new and significant progress in the ongoing fight against malaria. We start in Kenya, where malaria infection has been reduced by more than 50% in the last decade. As Kenya's Ministry of Health announces new strategies to eliminate malaria by 2030, WHO is now calling for increased support for innovation in the fight against the disease and for scaling up implementation to increase effective vaccination. Huba Habdi reports from Nairobi.
Kenya is taking significant steps towards the eradication of malaria with the implementation of several efforts targeted at various areas of the country. Head of the Ministry of Health National Malaria Program, Dr. Omar Ahmeddin, says the number of people suffering from malaria seems to be decreasing. Dr. Ahmeddin said overall the country has reduced the prevalence of malaria cases by 50% in the past 10 years to stand at 6%, down from 11% in 2010.
This malaria elimination plan will help us in developing the methods that we will follow to ensure that we have brought malaria down in those counties. The second is the Kenya Malaria Social Behavioral Strategy, which is a method that we will use to ensure that all our people know about malaria and how to protect themselves from malaria.
WHO County Representative in Kenya, Dr. Diallo Abdurrahman, says Kenya should increase its support for innovations and providing new tools in the fight against malaria. The WHO has noted that even though Kenya continues to make progress, there are new challenges.
Whether it is all the preventive measures such as insecticide-treated nets, we need to make sure that we expand the implementation of those tools that are already working to make sure that there is equity, and there is access especially to the vulnerable population. And in addition to that, the newly innovated tools that are introduced in the fight against malaria.
A variety of preventative measures targeting local needs have led to significant progress against malaria, but dwindling resources underscore the need to work more effectively. Asher Oyono, director of an organization working to eradicate malaria, No Malaria Kenya, or NOMAC, says the use of MOZI, a mosquito repellent, in the environment will reduce the incidence of effects of malaria.
There is another type of MOZI called soak and dry. Soak and dry are the ones we put on the clothes that have been used. Because you know that when the clothes come from the factory, you cannot return them to the factory. So we have made soak and dry. You put a small amount in a basin of water, and then you put clothes in there, and then you take it out, and when it dries, it gives people protection to prevent mosquitoes from approaching them.
According to USAID, the U.S. government provides $35 million every year for projects aimed at the fight against malaria.
Around the lake, the eight counties where the burden remains high because the climatic conditions are favorable is where we really need to strengthen our efforts to bring that burden lower. Once we bring that burden lower, you will see that reflected within the country's national prevalence.
Kenya says it has taken steps to reduce malaria to 6%. Last month, Kenya celebrated its first step in the use of malaria vaccines. However, the highest burden remains in counties located in the Lake region, accounting for 70% of malaria cases countrywide.
A new malaria vaccine developed by the University of Oxford has been given the green light for use in Ghana and Nigeria. The vaccine provides new hope in the fight against the mosquito-borne disease. Take a listen.
The vaccine, known as R21 Matrix-M, was developed by scientists at the University of Oxford. It was manufactured by the Serum Institute of India. R21 Matrix-M has shown promising results in a preliminary trial involving 450 children. Ghanaian authorities have approved it for children aged 5 to 36 months. This is the age group most at risk for death from malaria. Nigeria followed suit a few days later.
Continue to follow up to make sure there aren't any late side effects from vaccination, and of course to determine how long the vaccine works for. And it might be that after 3 or 4 years, another booster dose would be required.
Researchers say Oxford's R21 Matrix-M vaccine is 77% effective in preventing malaria. However, the WHO has not yet formally recommended the use of this vaccine. Data from an ongoing phase 3 clinical trial involving 4,800 children in Burkina Faso, Kenya, Mali, and Tanzania are due to be published in the coming months. In 2021, the WHO recommended another malaria vaccine, RTSS, produced by the British pharmaceutical giant GSK, a recommendation based on the results of a pilot program in 3 African countries.
The pilot countries have vaccinated more than 1,300,000 children since vaccination began and have reported a 1/3, almost 30% drop in hospitalizations of children with severe malaria. They've also seen, after 2 years in the areas where the vaccine was piloted, an almost 10% reduction in child deaths in the age group that is eligible for the vaccine.
Studies show that RTSS is 60% effective, but the protection decreased significantly over time, even with a booster dose. R21 Matrix-M brings more hope with an over 75% efficacy. Observers say Ghana and Nigeria's approvals are unusual, as the results from the final stage clinical trials for the vaccine are still pending.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
For more on the new malaria vaccine, I spoke with Professor Halidu Tinto, professor of parasitology and global health scientist with research and principal investigator of the R21 vaccine in Burkina Faso.
The R21 vaccine is a derivative of the RTSS vaccine. If you will, it is practically the same protein. And in terms of biotechnology, there have been innovations that have made it possible for R21 to be more immunogenic. It means that it allows the body to better react and produce the necessary antibodies to protect the individual. Unlike RTSS, we demonstrated in clinical trial phase 2 in Burkina Faso that R21 could protect up to 77%, which is enormous. We are in the process of accelerating the registration for this vaccine because we felt that given what we know about RTSS, which is a vaccine similar to R21, and the experience of COVID-19, it may not be necessary to wait until the end of phase 3 before moving forward with the certification of this vaccine. And so far, after a year of monitoring, we will already have an idea, and we believe that these results, in addition to those of phase 2, should allow the WHO and the regulators of African countries to move forward
register this vaccine so that people can access it quickly. Why wait for 4 years or 2 years or phase three? Why not go ahead and grant what they call a temporary authorization like we did for COVID-19? And if in the meantime, during phase three, we realize that there are problems, we could revisit it. Ghana and Nigeria have granted approval, and it will not be surprising to see that in the weeks or months to come, other African countries following in their footsteps. I think it is time for Africans to take charge. And we, as researchers, along with our counterparts in the Gambia and the United Kingdom, are exploring eventually testing this vaccine on a large scale in adults to see if it can also benefit Africa in general, which additionally could have an impact on transmission globally. So this idea is in the works, and if it all goes well, we will implement it by next year, a clinical trial among adults. It is true that we are very optimistic with this new vaccine, which is effective at more than 75%. But we're still finalizing the trials. And my message to people is, while we wait the deployment of this vaccine on a large scale, to continue to use the existing means of prevention, which are the mosquito nets, seasonal prevention measures, and all the steps that are recommended by our ministries of health.
That was Professor Halidu Tinto, professor of parasitology and global health scientist with research and principal investigator of the R21 vaccine in Burkina Faso.
On VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves 909 kHz and 1530 kHz. Our short waves are 6080, 15580, 4930, 15165, 15580 and 17530 kHz. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. When we come back, we'll have more on malaria. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. People in Africa have been fighting malaria for centuries. With the majority of malaria cases in Africa, we asked, how much of a concern is malaria to you, and how do you protect yourself? Here are some reactions from Nigeria.
My concern with malaria is that it increases mortality rate.
Malaria is something that is dangerous, which we have to be careful of, considering Kano, where we have a lot of drainages where we have a lot of water stagnant, and that can breed mosquito a lot.
All my house covered with nets so that the mosquito cannot penetrate to my family. Then secondly, if at all there's malaria, sign of malaria, then firstly, I take a first step to any chemistry near me. Then after 1 day, 2 days, if I don't see anything, then I take my people to hospital.
So far, the preventive measures is maybe we use mosquito nets, and if there's any other, how do I put it now, maybe traditional herbal drugs for it, good and fine. But I think the best is to prevent it, which is the mosquito net.
And I make sure my environment is clean, because I discover dirty environment can harbor mosquito, which in turn will lead to malaria.
Even in my area, I can use the nets. So applying to my body, like a supplement hacker. I'm not drinking herbal medicine about the malaria, because herbal medicine cannot prevent malaria.
But catching of malaria disease, I never want to take traditional medicine. I used to buy English medicine, I take it. But The worst about malaria in Nigeria is that immediately you take the drugs, you take the treatment, after some time, it will never take a lot of time. After some time, then we come back.
I prefer the medical prescription from the professional.
I don't use to herbal medicine because I don't know herbal medicine that cures malaria. I only go straight to hospital to see doctor.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Countries and partners globally are working tirelessly to hold the line against malaria, implementing innovative approaches to tailor and deliver life-saving tools to the most vulnerable and hard to reach. Dance Paid Mabuka Manda is Insectary Manager and Research Associate with the University of California Malaria Initiative. He works to develop new tools to add to the existing methods to control malaria. Take a listen to our conversation.
Malaria has been a big burden in Africa. And when you look at the money that is being spent on malaria is high, and the number of cases is high, but slightly currently there is a decline, like there's the number of cases has gone down. Even though still we have the current tools, which are really working, but the number is really going not so down, but moderate, because whereby you're able to see that now we only after every 2 minutes, a child is dying of malaria. But previously, we used to have like every minute a child die of malaria.
You are a malaria researcher, and you joined a medical school and became involved in malaria mosquito vectors following the death of your sister. What was the experience like, and how did it change your views on the need for better tools to control malaria?
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of things, especially when I talk about my sister, the death of my sister. But during that time, we had some tools that were existing. Like, for example, insecticide nets, we had ARS, which is indoor residual spraying, but still the number of cases of malaria deaths is high. So when my sister passed away through malaria, it really prompted me so much because I had very little knowledge about malaria. But as time goes by, when I looked at it and listened to TV and also radio and get more knowledge about malaria, it really gave me a push-up to go and study especially vector and especially mosquitoes that transmit malaria.
You are involved in developing new tools to control malaria. First of all, why did you focus on the vectors, and then what are you currently working on?
The vectors, because the way I've said that malaria is transmitted by a vector mosquito called Anopheles. So, and for this reason is that the vectors, like in Africa, being in sub-Saharan, where the in terms of temperature and the environment is good for malaria for mosquitoes to survive, so there's a high number of mosquitoes. And when you look at our budget in Africa, it's being consumed a lot especially when it comes to health through malaria. So malaria has been a very big burden. And then so when I looked at malaria, then the only option for me to know more about malaria was to study things more about vector. And that's how I started studying on vector, especially the mosquitoes. Currently, I would say that I'm working with I'm based at UCMI Davis, which is University of California Malaria Initiative, which is the UCMI. And I'm based at UC California in Davis. Although this malaria, UCMI California Malaria Initiative program is a collaboration of about five universities, that is University of California, Davis, University of California, Ivan, University of California, San Diego, University of California, Berkeley, John Hopkins. And also, we are also partnering with the Institute of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in Lisbon.
What time frame do you anticipate for the completion and use of this innovation that you're currently working on, or the type of impact that you hope to see through this innovation?
Okay, I will say that we don't have currently, we will not say we have a time frame, but we are hopeful that being based on the WHO guideline will give us time to be able to deliver. Although there's a lot of anticipation, because whenever you mention this tool, which is a genetically modified mosquito, there's a guideline that you're supposed to follow through WHO, whereby we cannot kind of like jumpstart or maybe do something about it, but we have to follow those guidelines. And then at the same time, also there's kind of a pressure to the community where we are going to roll out this program, because always people are ready, like they were like, where is the tool? We can't just take it immediately. We have to follow all the procedures, make sure we also have kind of like baseline data before the tool is available. But right now, I would say we are working towards it. We are at a good stage whereby the tool will be ready as soon as possible.
So genetically modified mosquitoes can be a subject of debate. What are you modifying exactly?
I would say that our modification is whereby we are working on a mosquito in a way that this anopheles mosquito will not be able to transmit the parasite. So at the end of the goal is to have zero parasite transmission. And for this tool, it's a good tool because the mosquito will still exist in the environment whereby when it comes to diversity, it will still be there. But the point is, we'll end up having, our end goal is to have zero parasite transmission. And when you talk about zero parasite transmission, then we'll have eradicated malaria. But the tool is not saying, we're not saying that the tool is going to pull out all the current existing tool. It's just a complementary tool, because the current tools that are there have been working, but have not been efficient. So our tool is just a complementary to add on the current existing tools.
So will the mosquitoes survive the modification, or is the goal also to kind of get rid of the mosquitoes as well?
The mosquito will survive, but what our aim is that the zero parasite transmission is our end goal, whereby the tool we're working on, that is our goal.
How much of a game changer do you anticipate this to be in the broad spectrum of tools to contain malaria?
It's not really going to be like what I say, that it's a game changer, but it's going to be one of the complementary tools, which will be the best tool. Because as I've said, that the current tools have worked, but not so much effective. So we believe that the tool, especially the genetically modified, whereby it's a cost-effective, sustainable innovation that is going to support the existing methods to fight malaria, and it will help accelerate fight towards zero parasite transmission. So this will be the best thing.
What is or what should be the next frontier in innovation for malaria research?
So one thing it will be that it's for African to lobby for this tool, because the tools need to be lobbied and more funds to be given so that we can be able to roll out this tool. Although it's cost effective and sustainable at long run, so that we can have free Africa, especially sub-Saharan, from malaria.
Danspeed Mabuka Manda, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
That was Danspeed Mabuka Manda, and Secretary Manager and Research Associate with the University of California Malaria Initiative.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
We turn now to snake bites. Snake experts in South Africa say an energy crisis is partly to blame for a shortage of antivenom in sub-Saharan Africa that has left at least three people dead in the past 3 weeks. South Africa supplies antivenom to the region, but frequent power cuts have made it harder to store the refrigerated supplies. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town, South Africa.
Bjorn Unger is the owner of the reptile garden. He's been working with venomous snakes for the past 24 years and hasn't been bitten once. And right now he's praying his luck doesn't run out, because thanks to a power shortage, he has no anti-venom. Handling the yellow snake, he says they come in many different colours.
They are extremely problematic, the Cape Cobra and the Black Mamba, in that they're extremely potent venom. They're responsible for most fatal snake bites in South Africa. But we do also get a lot of bites from the puff adders and the Mozambique spitters.
Alan Heath was recently bitten by a Cape Cobra in Noituk, Cape Town. He's lived to tell the tale, thanks to local snake catcher Stephen Megan, who knew where there was a stash of anti-venom. The two local hospitals Heath initially was taken to didn't have any.
I was walking the dogs, and the first thing I noticed, I just had a sharp pain in my left ankle. And I looked down, and the snake was actually attached to it. So I just grabbed it and threw it away.
Megan says it's a miracle Heath survived. In sub-Saharan Africa, as many as 20,000 people die a year, according to the World Health Organization, an admitted underestimate. Megan says the snake community has been battling to get answers about the shortage from government officials since it started a year ago and is affecting the entire sub-Saharan region. Another snake catcher, Arno Nudia, is part of the National Snake Bite Advisory Group, which includes top medical professionals. They've written to government officials appealing for urgent help.
Recently now in southern Africa, in Eswatini, which used to be Swaziland, we've had three people that have died as a result of not being able to get antivenom, as well as we're losing dogs on a daily basis.
Nadia says certain government hospitals have no antivenom, while others don't have sufficient supplies for adequate treatment of even one venomous snake bite.
Yes, we can pull them through with maybe six or eight vials, but they're probably going to have kidney damage. They'll probably lose tissue on part of their skin. They may have an amputation.
In response to VOA's questions, the National Health Laboratory Services says production levels of anti-venom should be adequate by the end of May. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voanews.com and voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.